Hey, it's Chaz and AJ in the morning.
Hey, what's going on?
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Here are some of the best parts from today's show.
Listen to it, please. Thank you.
And please subscribe, share, like, comment, all that stuff.
All of it, please.
Thank you. A New Haven police officer was shot last night, and there's a twist now. Some important evidence in the missing mom case could be thrown out. First, let's start with the New Haven police officer, actually Captain Anthony Duff, out of surgery and recovering now after he was shot last night. Eva Zamaris from Channel 3 Eyewitness News is outside the hospital. How's he doing?
Hey, good morning to you both. We're being told that he is awake at this hour. He's expected to be okay, which is the good news. He went into surgery last night. We're told that he was out of surgery by about 1 o'clock this morning. And we're also told by the mayor's office that Mayor Tony Harp was here at the hospital as well. She was staying by Captain Anthony Duff's wife's side as he was in surgery. And again, we are told that he's awake and conscious this morning. So definitely some good news.
Oh, that's good.
Excellent.
We want to send them flowers or pizza. We're not sure which one to send them.
Yeah, what would you send?
I would probably send some flowers. It's definitely been a tough, intense couple of hours. And I do have to give a shout out. The New Haven police chief gave a lot of credit last night in a press conference to several of his officers. They rushed to Captain Duff's side. They made tourniquets, and really their quick thinking and action made all of the difference last night before he was rushed here to the hospital. So kudos to those officers for their quick thinking and work last night, because it really, those seconds count.
That's an excellent point. I mean, we're all relieved that he's recovering and going to be fine, but it could have been a whole lot worse. Horribly.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Even what the chief was saying last night. I mean, he said, you know, he is lucky to be alive. And again, he went back and doubled back, just really crediting those officers, saying, you know, it's because of them. They thought, you know, they worked quickly. They jumped into action. They knew what to do. And really making those tourniquets, I think, saved his life.
So he's off duty. And then what happened? A shootout? He comes upon an active shooting and he gets involved?
Yeah, that's what we were being told by the police chief last night, that he was in the area of Henry Street and Dixville Avenue when he interrupted a shooting. He radioed back, letting his department know what was going on. And he was not on duty at the time. He was not in uniform at all. And then he radioed that he had been shot as well. But we also know that one person is dead in that shooting as well. And the person responsible is on the run. So New Haven police have a warning to people that live in the area to be on the lookout. You know, any information that they might have had, you know, whether they witnessed it, you know, every time with these police investigations, we say this all the time, but it really is up to the people who live in the area, the witnesses, those eyewitnesses that saw what happened. It's important that they call in, because that's really what aids police in these investigations.
It's tough for them.
Yeah.
It's tough because they have to live there, you know, and typically not good people are responsible for things like this. And, you know. The person who died in the shooting, do you know if that person was shot by Captain Duff or shot by the guy who was at large?
We're still waiting for more information on all of this, about what unfolded. So we are expecting to learn more this morning. We know that there's going to be a briefing at some point today. So hopefully this briefing will shed some more light on what happened, what unfolded. Because this is still very much a fluid situation and active investigation. So there's still a lot of unknowns at this point. So we are waiting to get a little bit more from police today.
Well, thoughts and prayers to Captain Anthony Duff and his family.
Yes.
Eva, thanks for coming on. Channel 3 has been doing a great job covering this.
Thank you. It's an important story, and we're just happy to know that Captain Duff is going to be okay, and obviously our thoughts are out with the victim as well. This is just a very heartbreaking story and definitely some tough news to cover this morning.
Thank you, Eva. Eva Zamaris, Channel 3 Eyewitness News. Here's another big Connecticut story now. It took a weird turn yesterday. The missing mom case. Let's bring in Attorney Mannix to kind of explain this to us. Norm asked for cell phone evidence to be tossed or suppressed, right?
Yes, that's right. As I understand, there's not a formal motion yet, right? But he made that oral kind of request when he was in court last week.
What are the chances of that happening?
You know, look, as a general matter in Connecticut courts, I will tell you, especially down in this end of the state, suppressing evidence over the last 10 or 15 years has become increasingly difficult with our judges. A lot depends upon timing. A lot depends upon what was said to whom, under what circumstances, about that phone.
So he goes, this all happened real early on. I think May 24th, she disappears. I think the 25th, he, Fotis, goes to the police station with his then attorney, and they ask him for his cell phone, and he hands it to him, thinking that they'll look at it, then he'll walk out.
Yeah.
And like, now this is ours now. Now, a day or two later, Norm gets involved and asks for the phone back. And they haven't gotten the phone back. And Norm now wants any fruits from that phone search to be suppressed.
Gotcha.
I read somewhere that if the state got a warrant for that evidence on his phone before Norm asked for the phone back, that Norm wouldn't be able to suppress it.
I don't think that. I mean, certainly the warrant, obtaining a warrant makes it more difficult for the defense to suppress evidence later. It doesn't prevent it entirely. I mean, warrants are produced for evidence, and their claims can be made later about constitutional issues, Fourth Amendment issues, police misconduct, which can still yield a suppression of evidence. It does become more difficult after the warrant, though.
Right. The phone, I don't know what they have or don't have in that particular cell phone, but it seems like the real gift from that phone was the pinging of the tower in Hartford that led him to the garbage cans, that led him to the surveillance video and the garbage bags, right?
Absolutely.
And all that stuff they have. So, like, if they suppress the cell phone stuff, they still have the garbage.
Well, this comes under the category that our Supreme Court calls the inevitable discovery rule. In other words, look, we're sorry about taking your phone. We're sorry about seizing your evidence. But, hey, we would have gotten the information anyway.
Right.
Now, can Norm argue, and this is a weird one, but can he say, well, you wouldn't have gotten the warrant until this day. The garbage would have been picked up by this day. Therefore, that anything you found in the garbage can't use.
Yeah, the defendant doesn't get to take advantage of other circumstances, you know, beyond anybody's control necessarily. I don't think he can make a colorable, a good faith claim that if they had waited to get the phone, then all, you know, the sanitation department wouldn't have gotten involved, et cetera, et cetera. I don't think he gets to take advantage of that.
Okay. All right, so it sounds like you read that same story I read, and you were like, another motion. I read it and thought, wow, some big stuff could be tossed out here.
Well, it's a little bit more than but it's not earth-shattering. The questions are, so you put yourself in the position of Mr. Doulos and his then-attorney. What exactly happened when he goes down to the police station? He's with an attorney, so there's a presumption that he's been advised of his rights. I know who the attorney was. He's a highly experienced attorney, and there's some type of an exchange at that point. Do I give him my phone? Sure, give you your phone. One of the things is
would you ever tell or let your client hand over his or her phone to the police?
Not under these circumstances.
No,
never,
that
ever,
seems
ever.
Like a big. I'm glad he made that mistake, but it sounds like a big mistake.
Big boo boo.
Yeah.
It's in these circumstances, you know, one of the things you want to do, aside from the constitutional issues and aside from, you know, providing your client's property to police, you also want to slow things down, right? The police are the ones who have the stopwatch. They're the ones who are controlling the pace, and you want to slow that pace down as much as you can. Even if you believe there's going to be a warrant that's going to be obtained in a serious case, you still want to slow things down.
Yeah. All right. I feel better about that now after talking to you. I was nervous. I'm acting like, you ever watch a show, you get so caught up in it. I know this is much more serious than a show, but
right.
You get caught up in the twists and turns. I'm so emotionally invested in this, still wondering where she is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sure, I get that. I think a lot of people are feeling that way, not just you. A lot of people looking at this and, oh my gosh, are they going to be able to throw out this evidence? I think it's a very, very difficult task.
Well, thank you for coming on, Attorney Maddox. We're linked up to your stuff at WPLR.com.
Thanks, you guys.
All right.
Thank you.
Woodstock, the anniversary.
Yes.
50 years.
50.
This Thursday.
It's a party.
And Jeff Beck and Rod Stewart were supposed to play there. They dropped out 2 weeks before. I mean, they're on the poster.
Right.
Never performed. Here are Jeff Beck and then lead singer Rod Stewart talking about why they dropped out and how glad they are they did.
There was a rift between me and Rod at that time. I don't know how it came about. And I was nervous about it. I thought, we're not ready for that. We're not ready to go up against Sly and the Family Stone.
He disappeared in the middle of the night. Next morning, he was gone. And we got a phone call. Jeff's gone home.
And when I saw the film, I just thought, thank God for my integrity. Thank God that the little birdie whispered, don't do it. Because I would have been up there, dated and frozen with that image, with the music not being quite right. I did the right thing.
He could have explained it to us and that would have made sense. But I do agree, I'm glad we didn't do it.
Just bailed.
Explanation would have helped. Yeah. It's an amazing story of success and also butt cracks. Chaz and AJ in the morning, 99.1 PLR. King of the Nerds, Mitch Halleck is in studio.
Yes. My liege.
I'm proud to know this guy because I've kind of watched this whole rocket get built and then take off. And
yeah.
What he has built here in Connecticut is insane. This terrific con is amazing.
Yes. Huge. Thank you very much.
So he couldn't come in yesterday because he's still, you know, he was in a coma sleeping.
Recuperating.
Pretty much. Yeah.
And
his con down.
I had no voice. So. My voice, I said, I don't know how you talk on the radio every day because. You could. I'm sounding like Barry White right now.
Oh, really? Sounds pretty sexy.
Explains the bright suit you're wearing.
Yeah. Sexy superhero.
Like get my wife on the phone. Anyway.
Why?
Yes.
Yeah, so we have some great stories from Terrific Con. One involves lots of butt cracks.
Yeah,
I was
going to
say
bed.
Bot cracks.
No, con crack, we'll call it.
Con crack.
It's like plumber's crack. You know that old thing where the guy comes over to fix the pipes and his pants are too low or whatever like that?
It was not so terrific, was it?
No. So, you know, guys are loading in, vendors and dealers and artists, and they're putting their stuff, and everyone's running around. You're not worried about your appearance at that point. You're just trying to get your booth together before the doors open and customers come in.
Yeah.
So you'll catch, you know, one or two. But then I started knowing it was almost of epidemic proportions because
you start looking.
Now it's like, is there anybody not showing parts of their body or something?
Right. And
now, when you say parts of your body, you mean just the butt crack?
You know,
are they
like
showing
the pants
coin slot?
Oh, well,
the coin slot.
What?
Yeah,
So it's getting worse and worse and worse. I'm like, well, maybe they'll pull the pants up when the show opens and stuff. Oh, it never ended.
Oh.
It never ended. No, in fact, one of the fellows.
That was a grand opening.
One of the fellows that built, you know, that big statue of Thanos we have?
Yes.
When you walk in, it's like 20 feet tall.
Right.
He knew I was starting to get like, what's going on here? So, you know what a henna tattoo is?
Yeah.
Where
they
paint those in?
Yeah, the fake tattoos.
He had a woman paint. What do you call them when they do the above the crack?
Oh, the tramp stamp.
The tramp stamp. He had one of them do a henna tattoo for a tramp stamp above there and dropped his pants so that it would just hang all that. And he was the first guy you saw when you walked into the show.
That's
and
awesome.
He was doing like makeup and zombie and face painting. So it was
those
aiming
are,
at you. And
so I'm like, instead of Thanos,
those
Anos.
Are the people you give a raise to.
I know, but you know, he knew I was getting a little mortified by it, but he just went with it. And everybody was like, oh, look at the guy's tattoo. I'm like,
right.
That's part of his anatomy right below.
So you had Thanos, Thanos and Anos.
Yeah, anyway, so yeah. It was just a pet
Captain
peeve.
Captain Anos, yes.
It was just a pet peeve of mine.
This was the entrance over here.
But there was Captain Anos and the butt crack.
There was more than Con Crack. There was, you know, good time had
that
by
would
all,
be a good band
know.
Name to play Terrific Con.
Con Crack.
Yeah.
Captain Anos.
Captain Anos.
And the Con Cracks.
Exactly, right.
Maybe next year when we do an after party. But yeah, that was just one of the little things I noticed. The other thing is, fans make things. I mean, you guys probably get stuff all the time. They make, I don't know what you want to call it, sculptures, artwork.
Fan art.
Yeah, they love you guys. They appreciate it, and they want to show you a token of their appreciation, so they make stuff.
I like money.
So, see, I buy tickets. Somebody made, and I'm not making this up, I think it was like old pasta. Maybe it was like
potato chips. Like a noodle art?
Yeah. Yeah,
like in elementary school.
Yeah,
like an ashtray or something like that.
Yeah, and you know they made it and they went to do it and they left it on the front counter. You know when you left me your Henry Winkler DVD last year and I lost it and I freaked out.
Right.
So I come walking back to the information counter, and there's this little thing there. And at first I thought it was someone's lunch.
Right.
Because it was made out of tin foil, and it was painted. I'm like, what?
Yeah. Someone left the lunch here.
How'd it taste?
And I picked it up, and I tossed it in the trash.
Oh, yeah. No.
So my son comes up. He's like, hey, what happened to that statue? And I'm looking around.
What statue? I said, lunch.
He said, there was a thing here that the guy made for Billy Dee Williams. I go,
uh-oh.
What did it look like? He goes, I don't know. It was about 8 inches tall. It was all shiny and silver. I go, oh, my God, that was something really? He goes, yeah, where is it? I go, the cleaning people just took it out. Oh, my God, he went to Billy to get a picture with him, this and that. I go, oh, and I'm torn.
Someone stole it.
Yeah, no. So what did I do? Like, no, I go run down and start looking through. It was all mashed up and stuff. So I'm trying to bend it back and fix it and all right. this and stuff. And my wife's staring at me. She goes, we got a million things to do, and you're worried about this tinfoil man.
Well, that's anyway. When you know you have a well-run event.
So that's and the it's worst well-organized. Thing.
Because you have time to go sift through the garbage for some stupid crown
right.
for
I don't know.
Billy Dee Williams or whatever it was.
Oh, a popcorn bowl. Yeah. Nerds. Thanks for anointing me that.
Yeah,
I had to do autographs this weekend.
Nice. Look at you.
No, not nice. I don't like attention. I'm one of those people. It's like, let me be in the corner. I'm
yeah, but introvert. AJ says you're a rock star.
You are, man. You're like the Mac Daddy. You walk in, everybody like snaps with attention. It's awesome.
No,
like Darth Vader walking in.
I guess it's cool. And then a little kid comes up to me, and the dad goes, this is the king of the nerds from the Chaz
King
AJ
of the
show.
Nerds.
They play my like, leash. They bow.
No, and I'm like, it's okay. And the little boy goes, can I give you a hug?
Oh.
And I go, what? He goes, can I hug you?
As long as you don't sue me 10 years from now.
No, really, yeah. And I literally stood like a piece of wood and didn't move. I was like, okay.
I'm not touching you.
Probably not a good idea.
Exactly.
Hands up.
Where's the camera?
I wouldn't mention
up in here.
I wouldn't mention wood.
Sign this form. You're hugging me on your own free will.
So yeah. I got my first hug.
Everybody knows what Fredo is, right?
Yep.
Fredo is the dumb brother in The Godfather.
I'm smart.
I'm smart too, Mike.
I'm smart, Mike. I can handle things. I'm smart.
He was the one that was looked over,
yes,
right? So
right.
He was next in line after Sonny. Sonny was killed. Fredo was next. But Fredo got looked over because he wasn't the sharpest couch in the drawer.
No, he was not. No.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So then they went to Michael, which they didn't want to go to Michael.
They had to.
They wanted to leave him unsullied.
They had better things in mind for him.
Right.
But Fredo just...
You could have been a senator.
Could have been, but didn't happen.
That's right.
Right.
So somebody called Chris Cuomo. And you know Chris Cuomo, his father was governor, and now his brother is governor of New York.
Right.
Chris Cuomo did mornings at ABC, Good Morning America, lost that gig. Now he's at CNN. It's kind of a crappy job.
Right.
So someone somewhere called him Fredo, and he did not like it.
I thought that's who you were.
No, punk ass bitches from the right call me Fredo. My name is Chris Cuomo. I'm an anchor on CNN. Fredo is from The Godfather. He was that weak brother.
Isn't that your
And they
brother,
use
brother?
It as an Italian aspersion. Any of you Italian?
I got a little bit.
It's an insult to your people. It's an insult to your f-ing people. It's like the N-word for us.
Hold it.
No, it's not.
Hold it.
No, it's not.
First of all, I get the feeling with this reaction, it's not the first time he's been called Fredo.
Exactly.
Right.
Like, you don't go bananas the first time, because you'd be like, what does that mean?
Exactly.
Oh, he's heard this a lot.
I think his father called him that. Hey, Fredo, get the paper.
Hey, Fredo.
Fredo, get the paper.
Hey, Fredo, get the paper. Get the paper,
Fredo. Get the paper.
Get the paper.
Walk the dog, Fredo.
Why do I have to walk the dog?
Because your brother's smarter than you. Walk the dog. Because
your brother's practicing being a future leader.
Don't worry. You're going to have CNN. Don't worry about it. You're good.
Right.
You're good. I already made some phone calls.
You can work for some cable news channel at some point.
I made some calls already. Don't worry about it. Go walk the dog, Fredo. While you're at it.
I'm sorry. Being called Fredo, if you're Italian, does not fall under the same umbrella as being called the N-word.
No. In his mind, it is, but no.
If he doesn't get eaten up and spit out by the machine that is the righteousness machine today,
yes, right.
I'd be shocked.
Or the Italian American Club.
You're comparing being called the stupid brother on The Godfather to being called a word that slave owners used to suppress an entire race of people.
Yeah, not quite the same thing.
Not quite the same.
No. You may want to look up your history
and
again.
And you're in news.
Yeah. They didn't tell you
I
that?
I don't know. Shouldn't you know the difference between the two?
You didn't do a story like that once?
You report stories. That's a mis... This is totally misreported.
Right.
Yes, no. Being called Fredo, I don't know. Am I missing something? Is anyone here Italian that hears Fredo and is like, oh, wait, that's like the N-word.
Yeah.
That's like calling me the N-word.
It's definitely not that.
Yeah.
But I still wouldn't recommend you do it to the wrong person.
Well, clearly.
Yeah.
Yeah, like him, for example.
Man, he seems like he's on steroids or something. There's an anger there that you could tell this is not the first time.
Call him a punk-ass bitch.
Chaz and AJ.
Hey, yeah. Fuck the fuel truck. Yeah, Rush Limbaugh is the one who gave him that nickname.
Oh, Fredo?
Wow.
Yeah, he calls him that all the time.
Oh, okay. Well, that's funny.
Yeah, sure it is.
But, I'm just, before I go too far into this, it's not, I mean, Italians don't hear that and say, oh, that's like calling me the N-word.
Right, I'm going to take my jacket and my watch off right now. I'm going to give you an ass kicking.
Right.
He's probably the only one that's been called that name who's Italian.
Right.
Right. To his face.
Day,
right. Thanks.
And she says, would you like some fettuccine Alfredo, is what I said, yeah.
What was the first part of that?
Fettuccine. I said you wanted some fettuccine Alfredo, I said. I didn't say Fredo. I said, you want some fettuccine Alfredo? Why are you calling me Fredo? What?
No.
Fettuccine Alfredo.
Right. I'm just ordering food here.
You looked hungry. Sorry.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, linguine. Sorry about that, pal.
Oh, this guy goes, bananas.
No cheese sauce. Relax there, pal.
Chaz and AJ. Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're on.
Come in. Over.
So, I've been on your show before, but I find it interesting about the Fredo thing.
Yes?
If I might say, as far as the Fredo thing goes, does he turn on his New York accent when he's trying to be a tough guy?
A little bit, yes.
I don't know anyone who does that. Do you, AJ?
Not at all, no.
No?
No.
Okay, thank you.
I see what you guys are doing here.
I didn't know what he was doing until he said that. And then I thought, oh, I know what's happening.
Right. So I'm just being facetious.
I helped him along. All right, let's hear the rest of this.
So is that a cool thing?
You're a much more reasonable guy in person than you seem to be on television.
Yeah, but if you want to
I love how this guy's being sarcastic. So he calls him Fredo.
Working, too.
Chris Cuomo goes bananas in his face. And now he's doing that. I'm going to speak in opposites of what's really happening now.
Like a Jedi Knight.
You seem much more reasonable in person than you do on television.
Right.
Like, doesn't that just set you off when people do that?
Yes, it does.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, but if you want to play, then we'll play. If you've got something you want to say about what I do on television, then say it. But don't be going to fall into your
Hey, listen.
What?
I don't want any problems.
Yeah, you're going to have a big problem.
What's the problem?
It's a little different on TV. Don't insult me like that.
I didn't insult you.
You call me Fredo. It's like I call you punk bitch. You like that? You want that to be your nickname?
I didn't call you that.
You called me Fredo. You know my name now.
This is a news anchor.
Yes.
I call you punk bitch.
Right. Yes.
That's like calling me the N-word.
Right.
This is a news anchor.
Not a respected one, but
news in air quotes. But
yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
Your name was.
You did not think my name was Fredo. Don't be a liar.
You
want to be a man. Stand up like a man.
I thought that's what your name was.
I'm sorry. Sorry. There's Chris Fredo Cuomo.
Yeah. I thought you look like a Fredo.
You do.
You just have that face.
You have the Fredo face.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not like they asked him if he wanted to go fishing or anything.
What's the matter? You're a Fredo?
No, man. You want to be a man. I'm here. Then own what you said.
Listen, man, I don't have a problem with you, man.
You're going to have a problem.
What? What are you going to do about it?
I'll ruin you.
I've got to ruin you.
Got to wrinkle your suit. Say bad things about you on TV. But I will shame your name, pal.
Oh, this is the worst because now, you know, you're going at it with this guy and you know you're being recorded. And it's okay.
Right. And you sound dumber each time.
What's that?
So you sound dumber each time.
Okay. Go ahead.
I'll throw you down these stairs like a punk.
Please do.
I'll throw you down these stairs.
That's the Fredo way.
This just in. Boom, boom.
Right.
Don't ever call me Fredo again. Back to you.
That was Anderson Cooper, by the way.
Oh, now everybody on the planet knows.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
So you hear Fredo a lot now.
Yeah.
Yeah, doesn't it make you want to just call him Fredo?
Right.
Yes. Hey, Fredo.
Please do.
Why, so you can sue?
You don't want
to sue?
Well, why don't you do it?
Take a swing. You're going to call me Fredo. Take a swing.
I'm not going to swing.
Take a swing. Watch your
hands.
I'll wreck your stuff.
Wreck
I like AJ's. I'll wreck your watch.
I'll wreck your career.
That would get me to go,
yes.
What?
Exactly, right. I will so damage your shirt.
Why would you wreck my watch?
That collar.
It's a nice watch.
Well,
my mother
out.
Gave it to me.
I'm going to ruin your stitching.
I'll snip your tie.
Exactly. Right?
Those cufflinks are going.
Yeah. I'm going to park in front of your car real close.
CNN said, Chris Cuomo defended himself when he was verbally attacked with the use of an ethnic slur.
Yes.
In an orchestrated setup, we completely support him.
They said, we're sorry, Fredo.
We support Fredo 100%.
Right, go Fredo.
He'll throw you downstairs. Be careful.
He will. You're a punk bitch.
There's a couple seconds left of this.
Yes, there is.
I'll wreck your stop. You didn't ask me, Fred. You didn't know what you were doing.
I thought it was your name.
You didn't know, right? Hey, you didn't know what you were saying, right?
I thought it was his name.
I'm breaking it up. This is my buddy.
Hey, look at all these cameras. You're in for it. You call me Fredo.
I'm in for what? You called me Fredo. The world will be with me.
Yes.
The Fredos of the world will unite.
Fredos unite.
Wow.
I am Fredo. We're all Fredo.
I do hate those people, though. That just, like, I'm going to turn my camera on and I'm going to get this guy to go mad just because, like, I got nothing better going on right now.
It should say, Welcome to New York, home of Fredo.
But did anyone think that he would go that crazy hearing that?
They clearly did.
Yeah.
No. Because if they did, they would have the whole thing.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
You'd have the beginning. Like, you have him mid like crazy.
What'd you call me, Fredo?
Yeah.
What'd you call me, Fredo?
Oh, he's going crazy. Turn the phone on.
Yeah.
They probably just walk by. Hey, Fredo.
Yeah.
There was the gasket.
I meant the other guy.
Right.
The guy next to you, whose name was Fredo. You find the actual actor who played Fredo and the Godfather standing right there. I'm sorry, man. I tried calling you. This guy freaked out over here.
Is the real Fredo still alive?
No. Oh,
you know who Cuomo looks like to me, Chris Cuomo? He looks like, what's the brother in the Marx Brothers? I know this is a very old reference.
Chico with the curly hair? Chico. That's a fine boss.
Every time I see him, I see Chico. Yeah. You just put a derby on him.
Yep, that's right. That's right, boss.
Yeah.
A glass of lemonade.
Wow. All right. So if you see Chris Cuomo somewhere, don't call him Fredo. Oh, this is exciting. One of the very first stunt women ever. Jane Austen on the show. Chaz and AJ in the morning, 99.1 PR. She's co-owner of Hollywood Stuntworks. How old were you? How did you get started?
Gosh, I was older when I started in the game compared to the kids today. But I was like 28. And I had an opportunity presented to me to be able to get my SAG card. And I jumped at it, literally.
Yep, she jumped through a window to get to it. Right. I jumped through hoops for that one.
Actually, I was flying I was co-pilot on a Huey 205 for a show called Tour of Duty.
Wow.
That was your first stunt?
That's how I got my card, yeah. Back in the 80s, there weren't a lot of 5'10" stunt women. I think there was myself and one other gal. And so as jobs came, I learned, and I taught myself to prep myself for these jobs. But then again, stunts weren't what they are today. I mean,
falling down a flight of stairs, but like, would you ask male stuntmen, like, well, how do I fall down a flight of stairs without hurting myself?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We really help each other out. And that's a really great segue into how I met my husband.
You fell
for
him?
Because I met him, I was divorced, and I met him. I got called to do this amazing stunt on a horrible movie. And it was a 650-foot descender, which means I fell off of a 65-story building. And I met him that day, and my husband is Kurt Lopp. He's an amazing stuntman and just all around is an expert at everything.
It's every guy, really, though.
Oh, he's amazing. And actually, he's right now in working on Fast and Furious 9 in London. So.
Whoa.
Nice.
I know.
Can we go back to this 65-story
fall? 65-story drop. We call it the three screamer.
You got to keep taking breaths.
When you start falling, it's... I mean, it was a long draw.
My stomach is turning just thinking about this.
I got to tell you, it was really fun.
No, I don't think so.
Well, yeah, because you're alive.
No parachute.
Yep.
So you're on top of a, what is it? Some kind of police case and you, or is it a fire? What, why is this person
He was a pilot. I was doubling Anna Nicole Smith and she was a pilot and she had a briefcase full of money that this bad guy was trying to get from her. So she attached herself to a window washing cable and jumped.
The cable would eventually tighten and put you through a window. So did you end up going through a window too?
Very good. Yes, I did.
Nice.
Interesting.
That whole pencil, then you come smashing through it to safety.
Oh, man.
Yep, and I got to tell you, man, you tried with that much cable. I think it was around 400 feet that I had to go around the corner of the building and try to, like, bounce off of it and then go around and back again. It was an exhausting day.
That's unbelievable.
But it was really fun. It was one of my favorite stunts I've done.
Yeah, but that's your first big stunt, though, it sounds like, right?
No, I had done, because women, the actresses don't like being around the aircraft. So besides doing the car commercials, I also was doing a lot of stuff. Like I worked on China Beach.
Okay.
And I was doing a lot of hanging out of aircraft.
Okay.
You
were that
there
person.
There were other things that I was doing, you know, and there was some fighting.
65 stories.
Yeah.
Attached to a cable. So you're really attached to the cable, or is that two different shots? One, you jump down onto an airbag,
no,
and then the second one, you...
That's what kept me from falling to the ground.
Gotcha.
The cable.
Important cable, yes.
How does that cable just cut you in half?
It was attached to a piece of equipment called a descender. And what a descender is that it makes it possible so that a stunt performer can do a high fall with nothing below them.
I'm good.
Did you, what do you feel and think when you're about to do this? Are you like a normal person where you think, wow, this could be bad if it goes wrong? Or are you excited like you're getting on a roller coaster?
Well, I was really excited. I was really excited about that one because I was like, I've got that false sense of security that, oh, I'm on a cable, so nothing is possibly going to happen to me. But the thing that was really, let me just say the word that sucked about that one, is that you have to imagine the top of a skyscraper. Well, you've got the roof of the building, but then you've got like 20 feet before you get to the actual outside, the facade of the top of the building. So you got to climb up this little iron ladder and walk, you know, 20 feet in the air on an I-beam to the place where the boom is over the lip of the top of the building. So then you clip on to your harness to the cable, and then you got to crawl out over the ledge of that facade, the lip.
Mm-hmm.
You can imagine that. And then you're hanging 650 feet in the air, and you don't have a radio, you don't have crew, you don't have anybody around you. So you don't know when they say action, when they take the brake off of the cable, and this thing starts unspooling on the descender, and you just start dropping. And what's going through your mind is, I hope that was intentional. I hope that my cable didn't break and that they actually, you know, I'm going.
Yeah, it's going to stop for a second now.
Yep. So for a split second, you're thinking this could be it.
Yeah, you're just like going, whoa, you know, and, you know, it's like, I don't know if you have any amusement parks around you where it's like a free fall kind of ride.
Yeah.
Where your stomach is still way up there when your, like, body's already, you know, 100 feet down.
Yeah.
It's that sensation. But it's very quiet and there's no one around you. And I had that stupid briefcase strapped to my wrist.
Can I ask, what do you get paid for a day's work like that?
Day after minimum, which is, I think these days are about $1,000 for 8 hours. But for that, and then you get on top of it, depending on what stunt you do, you get an adjustment. And that can vary anywhere from, you know, $200 for a stunt to $10,000. So it all depends on what you're doing, what's in the budget, what the coordinator has budgeted for you, and how many times you do it.
Have you ever said no to a stunt?
I have. And it was recently to double Jane Fonda. And I'm older now, just to let you know. I've got, you know, I'm not that old, but I'm older now. And I was supposed to do a pretty gnarly stairfall for an older actress in a movie. And I just looked at the setup and I talked to the coordinator and I just went, I'm probably going to get hurt on this. And where I'm at in my life right now, it wasn't worth it.
We heard Jane Fonda. Who else have you done stunts for, names we'd recognize?
Jennifer Beals. I was her stunt double for a very long time.
Okay.
And then I was also, I worked on a show called VIP.
Yes.
And I was not Pamela Anderson's double. I was Molly Culver's double on that, which that lasted 3 years, and that was really fun. That was a fun show to work on.
All right. We're linked up to all your stuff at WPLR.com. And Jane, just an honor to talk to you.
Yes.
And I look forward to our next chat. All right. Thank you, Jane.
This was the Jazz and AJ podcast. Thanks for getting through the whole damn thing. Subscribe now and please rate and review us. Unless you have terrible things to say, then please don't. Also, share this podcast with friends. Jazz and AJ in the Morning happens weekdays from 5:30 a.m. to 10 a.m. out of New Haven, Connecticut on the mighty 99.1 PLR.